And I want to ask you about the irony in jokes. Apparently, you had so many difficulties. You couldn't even get the fundamental elements of humour when you were young.
I couldn't. And not wanting to be left out as a child, I would laugh when other children laughed. But I had no idea what they were laughing about. It was almost like, I mean, I could hear words. And if it was concrete, like it's raining out, I could understand because I could conjure up an image. But as soon as it got abstract, and irony and humour is quite abstract, I had no idea. You know, it was almost like listening to language and having your translator broken. So I could not attach meaning to things.
So we have these sort of sections of our brain, and yours didn't connect in a sense.
They didn't. And I had multiple areas of difficulty. So the major one was comprehension, seeing relationships. I mean, I could not read a clock until I was 26 years old because it's, you know, seeing the relationship between the hour hand and the minute hand. I didn't understand cause and effect. I didn't understand why people did things. I didn't have insight. I did not understand my world. I was terrified if somebody would say something to me because I wouldn't understand what they were saying. I had a verbatim auditory memory, so say you said something to me, I would memorize it, I'd walk away and play it over in my head, and maybe I would understand it, but it might take 1 or 2 hours, and you hadn't waited that 1 or 2 hours for me to figure it out. So I was not part of human discourse. I mean, I struggled with relationships, I struggled with comprehension, so all of my world was really, really challenging and confusing.
So challenging, I understand, that you attempted suicide, failed fortunately, but your dad was an inventor of some kind, and he had a sort of like a personal philosophy that you grabbed hold of.
He did, and I'm very blessed in both of my parents. My mother was an educator, so she was determined her daughter was going to learn how to read and write. So in grade one, I became a workaholic. I came home at lunch and got flashcards. I came home after school and got flashcards, and eventually I learned how to read and write. And my dad had, I think, somewhere around 30 patents. He conditioned electricity. Don't ask me exactly what that means. But I caught that excitement from him. And he said, you know, if there's a problem in the world and no solution, it's your responsibility to go out and create a solution. And he said something very wise. He said, if the rest of the world tells you you can't do it, don't listen, because this is how science goes forward. And when I started this work, you know, first of all, I figured out, okay, it's my brain that's not working. And then maybe with neuroplasticity, I can make my brain work. Well, all my professors in graduate school at that time said, first of all, learning difficulties aren't related to your brain, which now we know they are. And they said, and even if they are, there's no neuroplasticity in humans. But I remembered what my father said, you know, you have to go out and try.
And so you met a Russian soldier, so to speak.
I did, on the pages of a book, The Man with a Shattered World. And I dedicate my book to Luria because I owe a life debt to him. He was the Russian neuropsychologist that was studying people after World War II with very localized head wounds and saying, okay, if there's damage to this part of the brain, what can the person no longer do? Therefore, you know, what is the job of the brain? And this was Leo Vyazetsky, the Russian soldier. And when I read his journal and his story, I thought, we are living the same lives. All the things he couldn't do because of his brain wound, I hadn't been able to do since birth, like telling time, fractions, relational concepts, even things like before and after, I couldn't understand because there's a relationship of something happening in time. So now I knew it was my brain that wasn't working. And then what do I do about it? This idea of neuroplasticity. Our brain is not hardwired. It is not fixed. We can actually shape our minds.
My guest is Barbara Arrowsmith-Young. She is in Queensland at the moment. She's been going around to different schools, talking with different students. There's actually an Arrowsmith program. When I spoke with Norman Doidge a couple of years ago, he was sort of gushing about your story because you did what sort of the supposed experts hadn't connected. And you, I guess you did it out of sort of necessity, but you went along lines of research where you combined a whole lot of material, and basically, you know, found your own solution and taught the scientists what was going on.
I did, and I was desperate because I was now 26. I was so slow in processing information. I talked about it. I lived in lag time. I didn't live in real time. And I saw no future. I figured nobody is ever going to hire me. There is no future for me. So out of that desperation, this work was born. And seeing those two lines of research and seeing the possibility. And I had no idea if it would work, but I figured, you know, listening to my father, I had to try. And at a certain point through the program that I created for myself, I realized there was human neuroplasticity because I could now do things that with the best will in the world before I couldn't. I could understand conversations. I was part of human discourse. I went back and taught myself all of mathematics from year one up to college. I could actually understand it from reason principles. I actually understood myself. I understood other people, like why people did things. It was profound. And then I wanted to help other people.
How did you do it in simple terms? At the moment, there's parents listening going, oh, my goodness, my child has been told that they're not academically gifted, they're not smart enough, they're not clever enough, and yes, they're struggling reading a clock face. Yes, they're struggling with these things. In simple terms, what did you do, Barbara Arrowsmith-Young?
So for me, the first exercise I created was using clocks. I mean, not that I wanted to necessarily learn how to tell time, which I did and I can, but the idea is you have to find a way to make your brain work really hard in the areas that it's not working well. And I needed to make my brain understand relationships. So I started drawing clocks, reading clocks, and then I started adding more hands because I had to make it
so
more complex.
So you exercised it.
I exercised.
You want to get the blood flowing through the brain and work it hard.
Work it really hard. It's sort of it's similar to physiotherapy. If you've got damage in a specific muscle, you're going to work that muscle with a physiotherapist, somebody that knows what they're doing. Here, we train teachers all around the world, and we're in six schools in Queensland. And that's what I've had the joy of visiting these last few days and meeting the students. And we train the teachers, and then the teachers deliver it within the school. So the students come into a cognitive classroom, and 40 minutes a day, 5 days a week, they work on their brain. I mean, we go to school to learn. We learn with our brain. Let's strengthen our brain.
I do a radio program, and I do a lot of stories on educational problems, and the issue comes up a lot, the issue of children and attention span, children and comprehension. In fact, pretty well every parent I know goes, attention, what is going on? I assume it's devices, but the devices weren't around when you were having difficulty. But can you speak to that issue of comprehension and attention, working memory and sort of social, emotional intelligence?
Yeah. All of these are really, really critical. So these are there are multiple regions in our brain, and each has a different job or function. And then they come together in networks to do things. So they're networks that are critical for attention. And if there's a weakness in any one of the areas in these networks, the child is going to have trouble attending. We strengthen those networks and those areas, and the child can attend. So the prefrontal cortex, which is critical with thinking, planning, problem-solving, mental initiative, we have programs to actually strengthen that. We're now doing research at the University of British Columbia in Canada, the Southern Illinois University in the States, and we're now looking into the brains of students going through this program. We're seeing strengthening connectivity and regions of the brain, and it's being supported. There's just a study out from Cambridge University this week showing children with learning difficulties have problems in connectivity in the brain. Our work is showing we're actually strengthening connectivity in the brain, which allows all the learning to go forward. It allows the student to attend, to comprehend, social, emotional, read those cues.
Does it work for adults as well?
Yes. I've worked with people up to 81.
So you don't have to be young in a sense.
You don't. It's really encouraging as I'm getting older that there's neuroplasticity across our lifespan. And we're now
hallelujah.
Yes. And we're working with people with acquired brain injury. So we're now working with people, car accident, motorcycle accident, and doing research again at the University in Canada, seeing the same kinds of results.
I learned from watching one of your TED Talks. I knew that no two people's fingerprints are the same. But your research has apparently highlighted that no two brains are exactly alike. I mean, every single of the 6-7 billion people on planet Earth, every brain is different.
We all have our own unique cognitive profile of strengths and weaknesses. And it's that combination and permutation that kind of makes life interesting, but also can make it challenging for some of these students. So anybody listening can probably think, okay, there's something I'm not good at, so I avoid. But when a child has a learning difficulty, it's what I call a cognitive load. A number of areas pile up to make certain aspects of learning difficult. And we can strengthen those areas so, the learning goes forward. I mean, I meet students all around the world that, weren't able to read or write. And now, are in year 11, this boy at Brisbane Boys College who's getting A's and B's in all his classes. He's writing essays. He's reading age-appropriate books. The girl that told me, she's at Blackheath and Thornburn College in Charters Towers, where she was so frightened because she didn't understand people that she'd hide her head in a book, but she didn't understand the book either, right? so now she says, I don't have to hide anymore. I understand my world. I can be me. I can relate to people. I can understand what I read. It's really profound.
My guest is Barbara Arrowsmith-Young. She's in Queensland at the moment. She, of course, wrote the book The Woman Who Changed Her Brain. If you've read the books of Norman Doidge, The Brain is Plastic, I think was the first one. I can't recall, but it's something like that anyhow. He talks about Barbara. In fact, I think he's done an introduction or a preface to your book, hasn't he?
He has.
Okay. So what is the latest research into neuroplasticity? And where are we at? Because you've been teaching the people who are the scientists in some ways. Your case study is known and taught and examined at universities all around the world now.
Yes, well, I'm actually presenting at Harvard in the end of April, which is really very, very exciting. I mean, the research now, we know there's neuroplasticity. We know the brain is capable of change.
Even into old age.
As I said, the oldest person I worked with is 81, and she made the same progress as a 12-year-old. You know, to me, it's really, really promising. And neuroplasticity can help things beyond just learning difficulties. There's work with people with chronic pain, with people with mental health issues. I mean, it makes sense that our brain is designed to be plastic because we're going to be in situations that, you know, are new and novel, and we have to learn how to deal with them. And what we're seeing in the research with these students when we're imaging their brains is connections that are underperforming are starting to strengthen. And these really critical networks, like the executive control network, the salience network, which mental initiative, problem solving, being able to plan and organize your life. We had a student that worked on that area. He went on to come second in the world designing a racing car in a Michelin contest. Now, he was gifted spatially, but we gave him the engine to drive his brain because he was so disorganized. It's
fantastic.
It's, yeah.
As I expected, a number of calls are coming in. Ron has asked, is there anything that you could advise for people who have had several concussions and suffer from short-term memory problems?
Yes. So we are working with individuals who've had traumatic brain injury, concussions from a series of causes, whether it's sports, whether it's accident. And again, we're finding that these programs are stimulating that. There's a great organization actually in Canada called ABI Wellness. So ABI Wellness. So I would ask him to Google that, ABI Wellness in Canada, and look at the research they're doing. It's really significant in terms of people with concussions.
The exciting thing for me is hearing about the mature brain can grow like a 12-year-old's brain, can improve and can grow at the same rate as an adolescent.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing. I mean, when I started this work, first of all, the belief was there was no neuroplasticity. Your brain is hardwired. Then over time, there was a belief, yes, there's neuroplasticity, but after age 12, it's kind of all over. And now we know it's across the lifespan. We know there's variability within plasticity. Some people have more, some people have less, but we all have neuroplasticity.
Finally, is there a little story or an anecdote you can tell me of a student here that's grown, that's improved, or even a mature person? Is there something you can tell me?
Well, I mean, I met a student actually at Darling Downs Christian School just today.
Okay.
Who, I guess, you know, have the NAPLAN testing here.
Yes.
And so in grade 3, 5, and 7, when she did those assessments, she was right at the very bottom in academic achievement. And then she decided to go into, her parents put her into this program. And so for 2 years, she was getting very little academics because we're working on her brain and cognition. She's now above average in everything in the grade 9 testing in NAPLAN. So for her, it isn't sitting in the academic classes that makes the difference. It's you change the brain and then the learning goes forward. And now she's got her future, you know, ahead of her where she can learn.
I'll let you go and have your Ferris wheel ride. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.